This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Across the nation, more children are being sent into foster care because of a parent's opioid addiction. America's opioid crisis is sending the dominoes tumbling through the social support systems. The destruction of the families by drug addiction throws more weight and stress on foster care and the criminal justice systems, and a parent's addiction is causing trauma for that child. Some children here are even born with drug withdrawal. In Bexar County, more babies are delivered with substance addiction problems than any other county in Texas. How is this drug crisis impacting the foster care system in Texas? What solutions are being proposed locally to protect children from the consequences of the opioid epidemic? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. If opioid addiction has touched your family, has caused problems with your family, and you've had to scramble to try and provide some support for those children, give us a call. You can be anonymous. We'd love to hear your story. 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org, and you can tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined this afternoon by Judge Peter Sakai. He is the judge of the 225th District Court. We know this is the Children's Court in Bexar County. That's how people know that as. That's where he sees a lot of child abuse and neglect cases and adoption for foster care. Also with us is Yvette Sanchez, the Chief Program Officer for the Children's Shelter of San Antonio, and Angela White is the CEO of Alpha Home. It's great to have you here this afternoon. So I'm going to start off with a statement that we got from CPS, Child Protective Services, and they say, this is their statement, we obviously are aware of opioid crisis and its effect on the Texas foster care. It would be inevitable. Judge Sakai and others have seen individual instances where opioids were a factor in a removal. But so far, there is no data on all that demonstrates that opioids have affected Texas foster care, and any claims that it affected Texas foster care, they are anecdotal only. Meth remains a big problem in Texas communities that lead to removal, and just in terms of child abuse fatalities, marijuana and alcohol respectively plays the largest role. Opioids are very rarely a factor in child abuse fatality cases. So that's from CPS. And I guess that they're the authority on that. But let me go over to Judge Peter Sakai, since you're mentioned in this statement. What are you seeing from the bench?
Well, David, we know that in cases of child abuse and neglect that come into court, most of the cases deal on the neglect side of child abuse and neglect. And within that neglect is an addiction issue. We know that perhaps 75 to 80% of the cases have addiction. And there's also a multiple effect of poverty and crime and criminal behavior, mental health, domestic violence, family violence. And so it's a complex puzzle of dysfunction within families that we have to. But we've learned, especially through our family drug court and early intervention program, our infant toddler court, is that we have to deal with the addiction first. We got to get people clean and sober. And once we do that, then we can be on a path to put children back with their parents.
Yvette Sanchez, Chief Program Officer for the Children's Shelter San Antonio. Do you see the horrors of addiction showing up on your doorstep?
What we see at the Children's Shelter is about 60% of the cases coming in into our care, it's due to neglectful supervision. So underneath that can be alcohol, marijuana use, meth, and maybe even opioids. But we estimate about 20% of the cases and clients we serve is due to opioids.
Has that changed? Is it a growing situation?
You know, that's hard to answer. We do see it, but like I said, sometimes it's masked under coming into care under neglectful supervision. So parents not watching their children, maybe some domestic violence going on in the home, and the police officers intervene. And it's not until we actually get into the case of the child where we're able to identify what exposures that child had.
And Angela White, CEO of Alpha Home, and you provide support for people who are trying to get out of addiction, right? And
yes.
And so what do you, and so you're dealing with people who have really, they're the ones who are living the life. What do they tell you?
Well, so Alpha Home, we do residential care for women only. We do outpatient and a family first program. 84% of the women I serve are mothers. Okay, so we are not seen as a non-profit. We're not seeing an uptick in opiates, methamphetamine, as you said, alcohol. But that's not to say that's where it started. So because we're a non-profit, we see people that don't have insurance. So they may have had an opiate crisis 2 years ago and gone to their insured providers and have gone on a steady slope downwards. So we'll see heroin and we'll see methamphetamine. So it's a hard question to answer, as I was saying, from children's shelter, because we're not seeing an uptick in our numbers of that at all. But methamphetamine is still way up there. But that's not to say it didn't start with a different addiction.
So when you say the insurance is an issue and in deciding, trying to get through this fog of war, like what is really happening, trying to establish what are the trends, what's causing this climate that we're in. And so how is insurance a factor in that?
Well, if you look at where the opiate crisis starts from and you look at it, did it come from prescriptions, okay, which is the standard story that's there right now. Those people normally were...
So they get painkillers from
correct.
The doctor, and but then they know that before they know it, they're addicted.
Yes. So, and you would normally expect the class of people that was impacting would have private insurance. So they would be going to different providers in Alpha Home. So we see them when they haven't been able to get well and receive treatment that's worked effectively for them. We'll see them 2-3 years down the line when the insurance has run out for them, because we are government funded.
And, so. And Judge Peter Sakai.
Dave, what we see in the court system in regards to the specific drug of choice sometimes does directly relate to the socioeconomic status mm-hmm. of the parent that comes in. What Angela's pointing out is, you know, when it's prescription medication, well, generally that person, that parent, that family has access to medical care and has insurance. They get to see their doctor. And occasionally we will see parents who abuse it by going to doctors and multiple doctors and getting these prescriptions and then abusing it. But for the most part, the majority of our cases, we deal with the parent who's basically buying their drugs off the street. So it's the meth. It's the heroin, it's the cocaine, that's the drug of choice with most parents at the level, socioeconomic level that come into our system. And obviously when they come into our court system, they have no insurance. It's very rare that we get a parent with insurance.
But also if you have someone who has means, they have an income, or they have some resources, they're going to be able to tap into that and maintain their addiction and keep it in a hidden life hidden until that's when things fall apart. And then that's when, I guess, when they end up at Alpha Home.
Yes. Yeah, I would agree with that. And again, you know, if it's not worked, a different level of recovery for them, that's when we see the people that have no resources. That's when they'll come to me, and that's when the women will come to me.
And okay, we're going to talk about that when we come back from the break, about the road to Alpha Home and what they find there and what happens to the children along that way. And that's when I guess they end up either with their grandparents, or end up in foster care, they end up at the children's shelter. What can we do for the children? What do we tell the children? They need explanations. They need a way to be able to process the situation, because they're dealing with deep, deep trauma. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We'd really love to hear your story if this sounds familiar. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about opioids, drug addiction, and the foster care system. Whenever you have something that ravages our society, goes through a support system that we have, it's the kids that pay the price. The kids are the biggest victim. We got to figure out what kind of support we can provide for them and help them sort through this. I want to go back, Judge Peter Sakai, to the statement that we got from the Child Protective Services, and they're saying effectively that they don't see the data. They know there's probably a problem out there, but they don't see the data for an opioid affecting the Texas foster care system. Is it that because the data is not there yet, that where you sit, you see it before it lands up as a statistic in front of the state officials? What's happening here?
I think he hit it on the head on the nail there. Basically, I don't think we're measuring the the type of drug or the severity of the drug. All we can tell you anecdotally is the worst drug of choice out there for parents in regards to their children are methamphetamine, heroin, and cocaine because of the addictiveness and the destructiveness of those street drugs. Obviously, marijuana and alcohol are drugs that will cause dysfunction in a family, and that's where we have to really go to our treatment providers, such as Alpha Home, who have to kind of work through that, and then the Children's Shelter, through their Hope Center, has to work through all the issues that are underlying it, with especially when it deals with trauma and the reasons why people turn to drugs.
So, Yvette Sanchez at the Children's Shelter of San Antonio, tell me about protect the children through their identity, but kind of paint a picture for me about what kind of children do you see? Who ends up on your doorstep?
We see children coming into our care just in wearing a diaper. Children coming who have never owned a pair of shoes. Children who haven't ever seen a dentist, a pediatrician, haven't had their basic needs met because they've been neglected. They don't have their basic rights and basic needs met.
So who brought the child to the children's shelter?
Most of the time, the children come police or CPS.
And the police officer, they go to a crime scene, and there's a child there.
Absolutely, yes.
And they look around and say, we got to take these people to jail. We have to deal with them. We got to get them into the system. Who's going to take care of this child?
Right. So the police will take them to the shelter.
I mean, they put the child in the back of a squad car.
They do.
And do they have like a? Forgive my dumb questions. Do they have a child seat, a car seat for a baby?
Some police officers will have child seats in their trunk, and then they will take them out.
Just for this one type of thing that they have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
It's that common that they would carry a child seat in their car. Oh, so then they radio ahead, they notify you that they're coming, you're coming?
Sometimes they just show up. They will just show up at the shelter and say, I just have three kids in our car, and we need a place for the children.
And what more can they tell you?
A lot of times they don't have a whole lot of history of the family, so they just said this is the situation. It was domestic violence. Nobody was watching over the children. The children haven't been fed. They haven't been bathed. The children have lice in their hair. The children are sick. And so we take them in, and we provide a thorough assessment of the child. We bathe the children. We feed the children. We clothe the children. And at that point, they are still in the custody of SAPD, and we wait for them to go to the judge court and just wait and see if they go back home or go back into a kinship, a relative, or foster care.
But basically, you know very little about that individual child and what they've gone through.
Absolutely. It's very traumatic for the child.
And it's very difficult to provide support for this child. If maybe you know their name, maybe it's not even the right name. I mean, how much do you know about that child?
We don't know a whole lot from the child from a SAPD case. CPS case, we'll know more about the child.
And so, Judge Sakai, this is probably all very familiar to you.
Yes, it is.
And what are we doing?
Well, what happens on those emergency calls, and let's take an example that's happened in our community. Remember those children that were tied up in the backyard? You know, and that was an example of the system working. We had a neighbor that called in because she heard babies, small children crying, and she knew something was wrong. She called it to CPS. It was treated as a priority one. They called a deputy, a Bexar County Sheriff's deputy, who came over, took the extra effort to look over the fence and to do additional investigation and found the children. Immediately took custody of those children. I don't know if those children ended up at the children's shelter, but they were taken to care. CPS was called. They immediately went in. They basically found out that this was a family that had moved recently from California, so there was very little history. That CPS had not been involved in this family. Emergency orders were created. They came to Judge Garcia or Judge Montemar, one of the children's court judges, got an emergency order. Case got pulled in. The parents were arrested for child neglect and child abandonment, child endangerment. And ultimately, after that incident, those children have now been adopted. They're out of our foster care system. They're in a permanent, beautiful, loving family. The parents have been held accountable, and as I understand, they've got to do a long time in prison for what they did. So that's an example of how the system works. But the bottom line, go back to what Yvette said, it is a very traumatic experience, not just the abuse, but the removal and then processing these children through our system.
Looking, I remember the house that these children were taken from, and from the street, you can see that one of the windows were knocked out, and it was filling the gap in the window was a Bob Marley poster. It seemed like the house was unkept. There was chaotic. You could just tell that this was an unsafe place for a child. But getting back to the issue of how drugs plays a role in trying to in destabilizing families, and it's up to the foster care system to try to pick up the pieces, you have to wonder, like, where do we begin in trying to prevent it from getting to that point? Any ideas, Judge?
Well, obviously what we have and we've instituted and we've had for nearly 15 years now is a family drug court. We've recently, the last 2 years, put on the early intervention program, which is the infant toddler court. And basically we're working with the same type of parents who have the same issues of addiction, mental health, family, domestic violence, and a myriad other dysfunctional issues within their families. And now we're working with Alpha Home as a community partner. We're working with Children's Shelter as a community partner. And we work in a multidisciplinary way so that the Children's Shelter are healing these children. Alpha Home and the other drug treatment providers out there are dealing with the parents and getting them to be clean and sober and changing their thinking and their belief system so that they can get out of the life of addiction. And that's where we're basically being able to put children back with their parents and putting them into loving families that will not repeat and come back in. That's the way we break the cycle of abuse and neglect.
The number to call in if you've got a question or a comment is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. So Angela White, the CEO of Alpha Home, it's a women facility. You say 84% of them are mothers. How big of an issue or the concern are these mothers have for their children? Are they thinking about their children?
Our mothers absolutely love their children. And let's talk about addiction is a disease. It's recognized as such. But we need to get underneath these women. These women, many women we serve, have been traumatized. They've been trafficked. They've been domestically abused. All kinds of stories. And tell you stories that would make your hair curl. And they use the drugs and alcohol they've used in order to change how they feel about themselves. And then they become addicted. But make no mistake, these women do love their children. They want their children back, and they want to work through a program, which, thank heavens for Judge Zakai and his court and the children's shelter support when the mothers cannot parent their children well, that they're there to help. But the gold standard of care is that families should be reunified when it's safe. Sometimes it's not always safe. Sometimes not everybody that struggles with addiction can get to recovery, but many times they can, and they deserve the opportunity to do so.
And to struggle with recovery and being reunited with the child, is that the goal that many of these women have?
Absolutely. And they work with CPS in treatment programs and their program plan to do that and achieve those things. And Judge Zakai holds them accountable when they come out of the drug court, as do Judge Montemayor and Judge Garcia. And Judge Glenn, actually, over on the felony side as well. But there's very, very few women. In fact, and hand on heart say, the women I speak to that we serve that don't want their children back. They want their family back.
And so, Judge Peter Zakai, you have a lot of things you have to weigh in considering family reunification. Number one is what's best for the child. And so how do you do that?
First, when those children come into our foster care system, one of the things we do locally here in Bexar County, and I give credit to CPS and all our nonprofit community, we look to family first. And we're very good about identifying relatives. And you mentioned at the onset of the opening of the show, we do have a lot of our foster kids, a lot of our children in our foster care system are actually placed with relatives. Most likely it's a grandparent, aunt, uncle, sometimes adult siblings. And basically, we have found that that helps preserve the family dynamic, keeps the child generally in their same cultural neighborhood, socioeconomic, so that there's not a big change of circumstance and minimizes the trauma. And we have. We've got some grandparents here in town that have put together an organization. In fact, they have a function tomorrow at San Pedro Springs for grandparents raising grandchildren. And they both are grandchildren and children within the foster care system and sometimes not in foster. That's one of the things I really appreciate and dear San Antonio in regards to family take care of family in this town. And so we've got a lot of relatives taking care of these children. And it, what it does, it allows the parent to take care of themselves while they go into treatment at Alpha Home and the other drug treatment providers or go to the children's shelter and the Hope Center to deal with the trauma that they've suffered.
But it's not easy if you're a grandparent raising a grandchild. There's a lot of financial responsibilities. Got to get those shoes for those kids and school supplies and everything else. If you're doing sort of an informal kinship care of your child, you frequently don't have access to those resources. Is that right?
Absolutely. And we see that in our iParent program. So we're able to provide services for the grandparents raising their grandchildren and resources like diapers and wipes and cribs, school uniforms, shoes, school supplies. So we actually have trained parent educators who go into the home, who build a relationship with the parent, their grandparent, and the children, assess their needs, and they go out to their home at least twice a month and provide services and make sure that they're preserving that family and getting the resources that they need. Also connecting them into our other programs like our Hope Center, which provides outpatient mental health therapy. And so we're able to provide therapy for the children as young as three. And we also do support groups for the grandparents.
So, but there's a big difference between formal and informal kinship care. If you're formal kinship, then you have visits from CPS, they have mandatory training, there's court visits, they go see you, Judge.
Correct.
So why do that?
Because they want to take care of their children. It's their blood, and that's the reason why I'm saying there's power in family, and that's the reason why we want to enhance the positiveness. You know, I think every family sometimes has these circumstances of addiction. And, you know, and in most families, they will rally around the person with addiction and provide that family support. Most of the parents that we see in our foster care system in the courts don't have that. They've been disconnected, so to speak. The families have kind of given up on them. There is no insurance. There is no support services. So the system has to kick in. But one of the things is I also want to recognize in regards to relatives and grandparents is Bexar County Commissioner's Court gave me some money in order to provide legal services so that we can get custody orders for these grandparents. Because you're right. Without a custody order, these families cannot access any type of government assistance. And so when we get custody orders for grandparents or relatives, then they can start getting government assistance, food stamps, or whatever entitlements there are for these families and keep these
especially
children
like
safe.
Especially medical care for the
kids. That's exactly right. Get these kids into school. The schools need custody orders in order to have these kids enrolled in their school system.
So we're hearing how complex the opioid system is with the foster care, opioid use and the foster care system. It's very complex. We've seen that it's a factor in destruction of the families. It's hard to put your finger on saying that's the only factor, but it's multiple things. We're going to be talking more about addiction, drug abuse issues, and also what – and I'd like to hear from some grandparents who are taking care of grandkids. How are you doing that? What more – what support do you need? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin. Dave, he's talking about opioids, drug addiction, and the foster care system. The drug crisis is putting added stress and need on our foster care system that's already maxed out. What's it look like from inside the system? What support is available? What do you need to know about what's happening in this world and it's impacting children? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. Sarah has called in. And Sarah, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you.
All right, Sarah, go ahead.
Yes. So my mother is taking care of my nephew. His father is in a treatment right now. and she's struggling. She's in Comal County. She lives rurally, and so she has trouble just accessing things in San Antonio and even using the internet to gain access to Medicaid and things like that.
All right, Sarah, so thank you for that. So we're seeing this is a statewide problem. Much of Texas is very rural. They don't have many of the resources that Bexar County has dedicated to trying to help families. And so, Yvette Sanchez, you're with the Children's Shelter of San Antonio. Do you see children coming in from outside of the area to the shelter?
We do. Most of the children we serve are in area, but we do have about, I'd say about 10% coming from other areas right now.
And Judge Peter Sakai, what do you see across Texas? Not every county has got a children's court.
You're correct. And this issue that Sarah's raised is an axis of legal to the justice system, and it's like she needs an attorney, and hopefully her mom can, or whoever the relative that needs help can seek an attorney. There are attorneys, especially in San Antonio, that might work pro bono, and there are legal aid organizations here in San Antonio that I believe serve Comal County. So she just needs to find some access to legal services, and that would be the basis to get legal custody in order to start accessing some of the governmental benefits that they may be entitled to.
Now let's go to Yolanda. Yolanda's called in. And Yolanda, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. My name is Yolanda Huff. I know Judge Sakai. He knows me. I'm an attorney at Litem here. I've been practicing in San Antonio for about 20 years. My question is, and I know it's not really related to the topic of what you guys are discussing today, my topic is the ad litems that represent children or mothers or fathers and the pay increase. We haven't gotten a pay increase in over since 1984. I know we've never gotten a pay increase since I've been doing CPS cases. And my question is are we ever going to get a pay increase? Would a commissioner's court ever approve a pay increase for ad litems in Bexar County?
All right, Yolanda, thank you for the call. We know that commissioner's court likes to give pay increases to themselves. But what about to other people?
Dave, that's a hard issue. I recognize Yolanda, and she's one of the finest attorney ad litems here in town, along with many, many other attorneys who do this work. Obviously, they're not getting enriched financially by doing this work. Hopefully, they're getting a reward by helping people getting their children back or finding children permanent homes. I would love to see the attorneys get more money, but obviously we need more money for treatment. We need money for services. We live in a very tough society of there's only a limited amount of money to go around, and there's tough decisions of where it should go. So I wish we had enough money to give for treatment. I wish we had more money for services, and I really wish we had more money for the attorneys who do the work in our children's court.
So can you, Judge, can you tell me more about the role that Yolanda plays as what does she say she was?
She's a court appointed attorney ad litem. Ad litem is as a court appointed attorney. Most parents are indigent. Obviously, children are always entitled to court appointed attorney. So in every CPS case, there's anywhere from 3 to 5 court appointed attorneys per case. And generally, a case will go over a year, year and a half. And the hope is that the parents will follow through on the services on their service plan and that the case will be dismissed and the children return. But if the parents don't get the job done and in being held accountable, sometimes they will have their rights terminated and the children will be freed up for adoption. And that's the legal process. And so that's separate and apart from what Children's Shelter and Alpha Home. They provide direct services to parents. What the lawyers do is provide direct legal services for these parents as they go through our justice system.
Yvette Sanchez, Chief Program Officer for the Children's Shelter of San Antonio. How is it explained to children what's going on with parents and addiction? Do the children have any idea what's going on?
Sometimes the children don't know why they were removed. And so our job is really to, in a very nurturing way, meet with the child and explain why they're here and explain that our job is to keep them safe. We want them to be safe. And a lot of the times the children recognize that they weren't in a safe place. But, of course, they love their parents unconditionally. They want to be with their parents. But they recognize that they were not being cared for. And so what we do is we build that relationship with a child. Luckily, we have an on-site mental health therapist who will meet with the child and talk to the child about what happened, explain why they're here. And a lot of times, you know, it takes a few days, maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks, and the child understands why they're there. And we constantly reinforce that they're safe, that their basic needs are being met. They're getting fed. They're getting snacks in between. So the children do start to feel safe, and they start to be children.
But there is no substitute for your parents.
Absolutely. You know, they miss their parents.
And you have to explain to them, or do you explain to them that, well, your mother or your father, they have a disease, they have a sickness? Or how do we frame that?
Well, depending on their developmental level, we do talk to them and let them know that right now that it's the time for their parents to get healthy. We want the parents to get healthy so that way they can come back together if the parents have visits. So we're very careful about if the child can even see the family. So we're very careful on how we work with the child and what we share with the child.
And over at Alpha Home, Angela White, that end of it is... How do the parents explain it to the child, what's going on, or what do you hear from the parents?
It depends very much on the age of the child, to your point, development age as well as real age. It depends on the status of CPS cases. They are usually the decision maker on if a visit can happen. We have a special baby room that they meet, not privy to the conversations between the mothers and children. It's private time for them. The CPS worker will be with them. But they want to play with their children. My mother's, their children leave and they're in tears, obviously, because they know that they've got to get well. But, you know, the visit's heart-wrenching for them because most of the time the children have been with that family, dysfunctionally or not, for that period of time. I think the big thing to note, though, here, I mean, you have Judge Akai, myself, Yvette in the room, is it takes a community to get women healthy, to get mothers and children and families, fathers as well, back together. And I think you touched on it briefly when we were talking in the break. You know, it's going to take a community, and the children need to be cared for, but the gold standard is they are back with family.
But some of the children are born with a drug withdrawal.
Yes.
And they have neonatal abstinence syndrome, mm-hmm. meaning they are feeling the loss of not having of the drug. And so the parents, the mothers who are at Alpha Home, they have their children who are being treated for this condition.
If babies are born withdrawing, the maximum length of time that normally takes is around 3 to 4 weeks. If the mother and baby can be kept together and do something called Kanga care, which is skin-to-skin care, usually the withdrawal effects are about 6 days. They lessen dramatically. So we're in partnership with Baptist Medical downtown, and they work with us to allow that to happen. And CPS have been very on board with that process as well. So if the mother has been using in pregnancy, maybe up to labor, because sometimes women will only come into an emergency room in full-on labor, then they will try and work with the mothers and children at that stage too. So it's not something that goes on into childhood. It's something that's very prevalent in an infant.
So the kangaroo care is something that benefits the child, but does it also benefit the mother?
Yeah, because the bonding and connection is there. So if a mother is in the hospital, obviously not using while they're in the hospital, that may be a really big incentive for them in that bonding moment to be able to get clean and sober. I'm not saying they don't need treatment after that. I'm not saying it's a miracle cure. But it creates a bond with a child, and that's a good start.
And Judge Peter Sakai, how does that weigh into, as you weigh the future of the child, as you look forward saying, what do I do that's best for the child? The mother is addicted. She's a drug addict. She wouldn't come in and did zero prenatal care and kept using during pregnancy and say, well, why is this going to be a good mother?
Because what we've learned through our early intervention program, our infant toddler court, is that when you provide the incentives and you provide a multidisciplinary team approach, which is, you've heard bit and pieces of it today through Angela and Yvette. When you provide those incentives to the parents, you give them a path to restoration, a path to rehabilitation, a path to sobriety. Most parents will rise to the occasion, but when we have a system that tends to be punitive, it tends to be negative, it tends to tell parents just go away and leave your children. What people don't realize is the cost of that. And what we found is that it just makes business sense that we put extra effort to keep families together, be more on the prevention side with the nurse partnership programs and these programs that are keeping children and families together. Is really makes more business sense in the sense of the use of taxpayer money. And then that way, I could then turn around and wholeheartedly try to increase the amount of money we give our attorneys, because obviously that's hard work that they do in the court system.
Do you struggle with drug addiction? Have you gone through treatment? How is your family affected? Are you a family member? Taking care of a child whose parents have lost custody, are you a foster parent with a child who's been touched by the drug addiction crisis? Give us a call. We'd love to hear your story. Your story will inspire others. The number to call is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the opioid crisis and the foster care system. If you've got a question or a comment, we'd love to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And Yvette Sanchez, the Chief Program Officer for the Children's Shelter of San Antonio, how can volunteers be a service for you, be a resource?
We always use volunteers. Volunteers help us keep running. We are a 24/7 operation at our emergency shelter, so we can always use volunteers to help come in and rock babies, to feed babies, to change babies, to be there just holding and just nurturing, loving on the babies, help organizing closets. They can, if we have volunteers who like to do maintenance, they can help us around the building. Volunteers who love to clean, they can help us clean. We take all volunteers.
And Judge Peter Sakai, Children's Court judge, other than more money, what more do you need?
What I think what we need to do is we need to get on the front end and be as proactive as we can on the prevention. I really do see some really great programs. I think Councilwoman Shirley Gonzalez is unrolling a program out in the west side in her council district.
That's the Promotora program?
Yes. I'm very excited and optimistic that what we need to do is save these families before they fall into the abyss of the child abuse and neglect world and the foster care system, and then go through our justice system. And as you heard, we got a lot of frustration there in our justice system, so we're trying to keep parents out of there.
When you talk to people who are dealing with addiction and their parents, and the things they fear, the three letters they fear the most are CPS. They don't call CPS on them. They'll do whatever and Angela White at Alpha Home, you provide treatment for women. Many of them, 84% of them are moms. Talk about their relationship with CPS.
A lot of times when they first come in, they're extremely fearful. You know, CPS are the baddies. Okay, so the ladies stay with me 70 to 90 days, and it's quite amazing how many CPS workers show up at their commencement ceremonies when they finished our program, and they have a good relationship with them at the end because they realize they are trying to help put their children together, back together with their mums, if the mothers are doing the right things. And the right things can be, you know, given to them by the court, given them to by a CPS plan, the feeding of the children's shelter of how the child is doing. So it's a very interesting thing to see that at the beginning they're like mortal enemies. And at the end it's like, okay, I know these people were helping me.
The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Aaron is on the line. Aaron, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I just had a quick question. I was wondering what sort of restrictions are placed on a family or the parents once their kids are taken for drug addiction or some sort of drug problem. What sort of restrictions are placed on the family? Like sometimes I hear that they have to have a requirement to be employed for a couple of months maybe, or get at least a driver's license or something like that. And I'm thinking of families that are already living in poverty that have drug problems, like when you ask for restrictions like that or for them to fulfill requirements like that before they're even able to really, after they get out of rehab or whatever, you might as well be asking them for, like, to be paying, like, a lot of money back to the, just to get their children back. I'm just wondering, like, if sometimes people feel those requirements or restrictions are sometimes too restrictive or just a little bit.
Okay. Aaron, thank you for the call. Basically. So let's find out. So first let me go to, let's go to Angela White over Alpha Home.
Okay. So in part, I would agree, to be honest. I mean,
you would agree that
there's a lot of requirements to meet. Okay. But those requirements are put in place thoughtfully. So, you know, you have to be able to look after your children again. You have to be able to feed them, to buy them shoes. And usually that takes having a job. Sometimes it does seem overwhelming to the parents and to the mothers because they have to be in treatment. And then when they finish treatment, they need a job. What Alpha Home do is, in our last 40 days of programming, we will help the women get work and get a job and start to meet those requirements. But I understand the concern. Sometimes it can seem very overwhelming to the parents concerned. But there's usually some really good reasons behind why they're on the plan.
But also, they're probably involved in a criminal justice system as well. And that's not easy to get out of.
That's correct, Dave. And what the caller is referring to from the CPS perspective is the CPS is required to put a service plan, which puts all these restrictions and requirements. And sometimes it is overburdensome in light of the circumstance of each parent. But I will tell you from family drug court perspective, that's one of the really power of our family drug court is what we basically do is we basically lessen the risk so that we can place these children as quickly as we can so that really the number one issue in our family drug court, get clean and sober. You get clean and sober or you start on the path of sobriety, I tell you, we're ready to put those kids back. And obviously it takes a lot of work over at Alpha Home and the other drug treatment providers to get those parents to basically turn it around. But I will tell you from a family drug court perspective, yes, the burden is heavy, but when we have a court system, and that's why the justice system can be a process where due process. So we're trying to be more wider in perspective of looking at risk. And if the risk can be abated, then let's put those kids back. Maybe those kids may not be in the best school district. They may not be in our best neighborhoods, but that's the neighborhood that they were born in. And that's really, we should respect that without endangering or put in us unnecessary risk.
So when we talk about parents, you know, usually it's the husband and the wife. Where's the husband in on this? Are they both usually addicted? If one's addicted, they're both addicted. Judge?
Dave, the reality is, especially in regards to children removed, is we tend to not to have the typical nuclear family of father and mother. What we have is mother typically with a boyfriend, paramour, significant other that's not related to the child. And some of our horrific child deaths are because the paramour, boyfriend, significant other is the de facto daycare because there's not resources for adequate daycare. We have a lot of moms that are going to work that aren't addicted, but what happens is they're leaving their kids with these boyfriends, paramour, significant others, and they're not equipped to handle crying babies. And what happens, you have a crying baby, they lose it. And we've seen some really horrific injuries and deaths as a result of that. And so that's another issue of resources. You know, if we had adequate daycare for working moms, we might not see such horrific child abuse.
So we have people who are dealing with addiction. They are a parent, probably most likely a single parent, and they have very little support structure around them. That's a very stressful situation for an individual, and usually when you hit your limit, you want to hit the bottle, and next thing you know, you're back on the downward path. It doesn't seem very optimistic to me. I mean, where do you find your victories? Where do you find, like, yay, this is working, Judge Sakai?
Well, you heard it. Angela mentioned, you know, sometimes these parents are so angry and upset that their children were taken away. But once they find their way, once they get on the path of sobriety, I will tell you, in our family drug court and early intervention program graduations, we have parents that thank CPS. They thank that their children were removed because it was the wake-up call, and it put them back on track. And that's what they have to, but they have to be taught. They have to be given, because unfortunately a lot of our parents weren't taught by their parents. And it's a cycle and generational issue of abuse and neglect getting passed down. What do you think, Angela?
I think you're absolutely right, for one thing. But at Alpha Home as well, talking about ongoing support. So, you know, they'll do residential care. Then we have a six-month outpatient program. Then we have a Family First program. We have an alumni that's nearly 600 women strong. So the support networks underneath who we serve are also put in place. And that's really important. You touched upon it. A lot of the women that we serve should not go back to whence they came. They shouldn't have the paramour, I love that word, they shouldn't have the paramour that they had.
That's a generous term.
It's a very generous term, but it's commonly used. So we have to make sure that the support networks are there. Transitional living is there. There's resources for mothers and children to stay in safe places together. And there's homes where they can do that if it's not familial support. And that, you know, we empower them to say no to whomever it may be, whether that's a paramour or a bottle or a pill or whatever it happens to be.
And so, Yvette Sanchez, at the Children's Shelter of San Antonio, do you see family reunifications? You see children getting back with their moms? Do you ever see that end of it? Or what's your view?
We do, especially in our family strengthening department. So we have different programs, one being iParent, where we have families who are being served by a parent educator who becomes more of like a life coach. And so they serve families for up to 2 years. And so we see a lot of that reunification. Maybe the family has an open case with CPS. Maybe there was domestic violence or substance abuse. But we get to see the families staying together. One, because of the resources that we have in the community. And two, because the parents want to do better. They want to provide for their families, and sometimes they just need to get healthy and they need to access resources like Alpha Home in order to do that. We also have a really successful program for fathers. It's our Compadre y Compadre program. We've had that since 2008. So any dad or caregiver, male caregiver, it could be the boyfriend, the paramour, if you will, coming and to enroll and learn about what it is to care for a child and an infant, what to do when you're at your wit's end, and what resources.
And real quickly, we're almost out of time, but I want to just touch on this note from CPS, Judge Sakai, last time, when they're saying they're not seeing an opioid crisis impacting the foster care system. Is this telling us that they just don't get it right now, but they will later?
It's a hidden secret in our community. I think you'll start seeing it when parents who run out of insurance or run out of the ability to treat the opioid crisis within themselves, we'll start seeing it. I just think it's a wave. We're seeing it in other parts of the country. It's at a high level. We're going to see it. It's coming.
All right, Judge Honorable Peter Sakai, judge from the 225th District Court. I want to thank you for joining us this afternoon. Yvette Sanchez, Chief Program Officer for the Children's Shelter of San Antonio, and Angela White, the CEO of Alpha Home. I'm David Martin Davies. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.